Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down, and that foot is me.
We say hi to Charlie McBride. Coach, is it warming up for you up north?
Oh, I just love this stuff.
What type of stuff are you referring to?
It's I just love wind. I need a sailboat.
Coach, of course, a defensive coordinator loves wind when a quarterback's got to throw into it, right?
Wind. That's why I said I love it. It's good. Wind's good for you, except when you punt and it blows back in your face.
Yeah, we had enough wind at Junior's baseball game yesterday to make 50 feel like 45.
Oh, I know. The whole Big Ten baseball season, I've watched a lot of the games.
Yeah.
And it seems like the whole year has been fall.
Oh, it is.
You know, I mean, it's like playing in the fall. You know, it kind of good football weather is what it is.
You are right on where it's felt like it's retreated back to fall. And we were sitting at 94 on Thursday, and then it's time for the winter coat Sunday morning, you know? So, man.
Well, that's the problem with our whole area. When you're from that, you know, this area, it snows one day and it's 90 the next year. There's people playing golf on the golf course one day, and the next day they're shoveling snow.
Yeah. Mother Nature just needs to put her Jack Daniels down, I think. But I want to get into some Nebraska football stuff with you. And the word is that Dedrick Mills, the JUCO kid out of Kansas, the running back, that's 5'11", 215 pounds, kind of the Ozigbo-type body and power back, has gotten the grades to be a part of the football team and join the team this week. Coach, now he's not officially been accepted to the university, but that's the last formality, right? So what's your reaction to that when it comes to that type of back and this type of offense to survive in the Big Ten?
Well, I don't know the kid, you know, but I think probably one thing he's done is probably learned a lesson by, you know, academically to what he has to do, and I think it's probably going to be the better form coming to Nebraska and realizing that, you know, this world has got other things in it besides football, because, you know, and he's got to realize you can't eat the football, so, you know, you got to do something in your life, and so maybe all this kind of rigmarole, trouble, kind of, if you want to call it that, academically, he's gone through, is going to help him be a better person and a better player. And because I think when you have, there's a period of time when you do get accepted, he's going to have to figure out whether, you know, if it's just going to be football and that, and you'll find out a lot of kids, it is just football. However, they realize that maybe someday I really want to get my full education, and no matter what he does, if he goes on, maybe plays great and goes on to the NFL, but he knows that he's going to find out from the counseling service and the people around him that education really means a lot to him, and I think it'll make him a better football player too.
Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. And it, you know, some guys, it hits them at different points of their life with the career choice, right? When it comes to playing high level college football, and Mills is an interesting story just because of how good he was, how early he was a force at Georgia Tech. You have the failed drug test stuff, then you got to go to community college. You got to sweat out getting the grades you need. It's not that you're not a smart kid. It just kind of comes down to growing up a little bit and doing the work, because the football part's the fun, right? It's the dessert part of it. And
yeah, well, naturally.
Right? And then now, I mean, he's had to grind his way back in. And, Coach, you look at Coach Frost's offense and what Nebraska wants to do, they got a lot of fast dudes – But they don't have a body type like Mills. And to me, that's what's so important. I mean, imagine the offense a year ago, what it would have been without a guy like Ozigbo. And I'm not calling Mills Ozigbo, but it's similar body-wise.
Right. I think, you know, when you get around to football, you know, you always kind of look at, you know, kind of laugh at fullbacks in that spread offense. But, you know, a fullback can run 4.6 or 4.52, you know. So I think that's a big thing in a lot of teams. I think right now you're looking at physical backs being part of it rather than, you know, you have to have the kind of people that they have in their offense, guys that can fly.
Right.
And usually they're not 230.
No.
You know, so you got to, you know, you commit yourself. And I remember, I'll never forget when I had a player in, and if you go back and watch the Big Ten TV station, they picked the 10 top athletes there were in the Big Ten.
Sure.
And I had a kid that I was recruiting who's coming to Nebraska, and he was turned down because he was a quarterback. He was too small, and I tried to sell the point. He could play any place on the field, punt, return, receiver, anywhere, okay? No. You know,
Who was he?
They said no. They didn't want to take him because of his size. Well, his name was Antoine Randall L.
Oh, my
and
Lord.
As you look at the thing, he's one of the top five players in the history of the state of the Big Ten.
Oh, he is. He was a quarterback, a wideout. He played in the NFL.
He played wideout, quarterback. Wherever you needed him, he played there. And he went on and played some in the NFL. And the thing is, you know, the thing that is exciting about what Scott's done, he's done that with players that are like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's made people, you know, he's made kids, you know, it used to be, well, the kid, he's not big enough, but he can be a wrestler. Or he's not big enough, or he could, you know, he could run track.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, hey, you can play if you, you know. I went and recruited a kid who nobody recruited, and all of a sudden Notre Dame wanted him at the end.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a 4.8, and when he left Wisconsin, he was the eighth leading rusher in college football in the history of the whole game.
Man.
You know, and he ran 4.8 every time. But, I mean, you try to tackle him.
Right.
And everybody used to, you know, in the old days, there was a guy named Paul Giel at Minnesota, and he was slow. You know, they all said slow, small, and friendly, but yet you couldn't tackle him. So, you know, that's what happens. You take a chance on some people, and you go against the grain. Sure, if you can get a guy that's 6'1", 230 pounds, 225 pounds, runs a 4.4, good. You might as well take him, you know. But a lot of times you can't, so you get the exciting players.
Right.
And that's what I've seen, you know, that Scott had down there. They had guys that were exciting, guys that had speed, guys that could do things. And if you have one of those big, strong physical backs, it makes a big difference in your whole offense, because what are you going to do? You better get ready to stop both of them.
That's just it.
And the physical part of it.
Yeah, the thunder and lightning combination is just tough for defenses. Charlie McBride's with us Mondays with Charlie Hale, Varsity Radio. Coach, I got to ask you. So, and I'm thinking about Antoine Randall L, because he got out of college right about the time, maybe a year or two after you retired. But I'm thinking of those late 90s teams where you guys were right there.
Yep.
And you had Crouch, and you had Newcomb, and you had Jamal Lord, and that era, right? Where
right.
And Antoine Randall L would have been pretty awesome for the team.
Well, that's what I, you know, he was, you knew when you recruited him, you knew when you watched him play, you knew things that he could do, so many different things. He was a heck of a baseball player.
Just an athlete.
I mean, this guy, you could line up any place you wanted to offensively and or at corner defensively or safety if you were free safety type of team.
Yeah.
You know, that was had a guy on the top. You know, he could cover ground. He could run. He could throw. He could do everything you want a kid to do. and then I hear no. And
who shuts you down? Who shuts you down?
Believe it or not, Turner was the guy that said he was too small.
Really?
Well, there was a combination.
Sure.
Was, and the other guy that was too small at the time, too, was, of course, the guy that went to Oregon or Ohio, Oklahoma State. They turned him down. He was too small, too.
Who's the kid?
Barry Sanders.
Oh, yeah, that guy. The one your defenses said don't hurt Thurman about?
So I just walk, you know, I just walk around there, and the town said the number one thing in the world is recruiting. Okay, well, here's two of them, and that didn't work. So,
man.
You know, that's the way it goes. I mean, when you have a list, mm-hmm. you have a priority. And now we're going to take one small running back. Okay, they took one ahead of him, mm-hmm. and that was the answer. It wasn't that he wasn't good enough. It's that we had already taken a small running back, and that's what the decision was to do.
Man,
so
Barry
Sanders.
Barry Sanders.
Randall L. was not part of that decision. This was a different deal, and
yeah.
You know, look at the guy that's at the Cardinals right now that played at Oklahoma.
Yeah, Murray, Kyler Murray.
Yeah, sure. Well, why couldn't Randall L. be the, you know, be same. The same kind?
Oh, I know. I think you're right.
You know, and I'll tell you one thing. He was bigger than Mickey Joseph.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. No, I'm not. There's no argument there.
But that's why walk-ons are so exciting to me.
Yeah.
They were the most exciting kids I ever when you were coaching. Which guy's going to be Superman? And there's going to be one. I'll promise you that. You know, and there's going to be more than one. And if you look back and look at the guys recently that have, you know, gone into the NFL, some of the kids from Nebraska, they were walk-ons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I mean, I could go back and, you know, tell you about 100 kids, you know, and that's why I think when Scott came back, he realized what made that program, and he's carrying through with it.
Charlie.
And it's going on to everybody else. We're not the only ones that just said, hey, let's do what Nebraska did.
Right. Well, and Wisconsin's been doing it with Barry up there for years, the Nebraska way with the walk-ons, and it's helped them become really, really
Iowa,
good.
Minnesota, all of those schools are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the biggest thing right now that in favor of Nebraska is that you can talk to kids out of state a little bit more because the cost of going to school there is not $80,000 or $70,000 yeah. like it is going to SC or mm-hmm. some of these schools. You know, you can't, no way could afford to, your family could afford to pay for them. So they've got a little bit of an advantage there, I think, in some respects.
Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Mondays with Charlie. Coach, I don't have a lot of time left. I just wanted to kind of bring it back to academics and got about a minute and a half here, but a guy that you're close with that really had to bust his tail academically, and he did so, was Jared Tomich. He's a success story of a guy putting the work in, isn't he?
Yep. He was made that way, though.
Yeah.
You know, you knew when he was a kid he was a worker, and when he said he did was going to do something, he did it. You know, I won't let you down, Coach. When you hear a guy say that when he's a young man, you know, you really, you know, that's not what a lot of young men say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just said, you know, I said, okay, you're going to go. Let's go. He said, I won't let you down. And that's where he's coming from. And he still hasn't let me down. It's, you know, I mean, after all these years, if I've ever needed him, mm-hmm. he's 2 hours away. He'd be here. He'd come, you know, he always says, call me. If you need some help over there, I'll come and, you know, help you. And they have.
Yeah.
You know, and so those are the kind of kids, you know, that win for you.
Absolutely. And Jared's academic hurdles were well documented. He overcame them and did a great job to graduate, and years in the NFL, obviously, and a great player at Nebraska. And It's a guy that was a walk-on that turned into a defensive player of the year guy for Coach McBride. Coach, we're off next Monday for the holiday, but we'll get caught up with you next week, okay?
You mean we're not on next Monday?
We're not on next Monday.
What am I going to do?
Well, I'll still call you.
Okay. I'll just sit down there and spend 20, 30 minutes with my wife talking.
Yeah, that sounds like a winner. I'll still call you. We just won't be on the radio. How's that sound?
Okay.
That's fun.
Well, hey, have a good week, and I hope the weather treats you right.
Yeah, same to you, and enjoy that wind, you defensive guy. I mean, man.
Okay.
Take care, Coach.
That's fun. You just go stand it and then, you know, take the punishment.
We have, my friend. We have.
Okay.
Take care, Coach. Thanks again.
Talk to you later. See ya. Thanks a lot. Bye.
With Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Let's spend some time talking football. We welcome in with the Big Ten Network the coach, Jerry DiNardo. At Jerry DiNardo on Twitter is where you find him. Coach, thanks for a few minutes. How's your week been?
It's been good. How about you?
We're good, man. We're kind of in the midst of Big Ten baseball. We were up in Omaha to kick it off yesterday, and we're now down to 100 days, Coach, before college football cranks back up. So it is kind of talking season with schedules and off-season thoughts and projections. And I wanted to start real quick with a topic that was asked to Nebraska Athletic Director Bill Moose, and that is maybe having the conversation about allowing alcohol, beer, and wine in some of the suites and kind of the club seating region in Memorial Stadium at some point. I know there's only five schools in the Big Ten that don't allow it. Nebraska is one of them. I want to get your take on this, man, because you spent a lot of your years at Colorado and at LSU, both places that are known to be pretty raucous. And I know Colorado had beer for a long time, and they have it again. But what's your take on it? As a head coach, you probably don't care, but you also want a kind of a 12th man atmosphere, I would assume. And do you have a thought or an opinion on alcohol in college football?
Well, I think it's like everything else in college football that, you know, this was at one point more of a academic enterprise. And I think we'd be foolish to think that it's not more of a business enterprise now than it has been in the past. And with that comes the salaries that we're seeing, the sponsorships that we're seeing. And I would think that no matter how much money everybody's making, an administrator always welcomes a way to make more money. And I think beer sales, and I think, you know, you take the Big Ten Network, I mean, advertising, they've never advertised or had arrangement with alcohol, beer, or whatever. I'm guessing they may be rethinking it as well. I mean, the facilities are fabulous, but they're expensive. And the student rights have increased, and that's expensive. I wouldn't see why somebody would argue against the beer sales. I don't think civility is the issue. I mean, I think people all over the country in different events go to sporting events and drink beer or alcohol.
Jerry DiNardo's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Yeah, I mean, it's available. You go to a conference championship game, you go to an NCAA basketball tournament, and you go to a bowl game. I mean, you're buying probably a $12 beer by now, but you have the option to buy a $12 beer. It's, you know.
Well, what's the argument against it? I mean, really, what's the argument against it?
The only, and I'm not against it. I think if you want to move forward with it, great. It comes down to liability and underage. I mean, do you just sell it in the club areas, or do you allow it all across the stadium? And that's a sticking point.
The age is a sticking point?
As far as underage. Kids not getting their hands on it.
Don't you have to present an ID when you buy it? I mean, it's no different than if you go into a liquor store with a false ID. I mean,
Right. No,
I don't understand how that is a sticky point. I mean, we're never going to stop 100% of the people breaking the law. I mean, that's not going to happen.
No, I'm not arguing with you, Coach, at all. I understand. I'm just presenting the other side of it as far as, hey, do you limit it to, okay, you can only buy one beer per person versus a maximum of two or three, and do you sneak one back to a 19-year-old who can't handle them? You know what I mean? That type of thing. With Colorado, I mean, how did it work with when you were at CU with beer sales? I mean, was it a good thing? Was it a bad thing? Did you notice it?
Yeah, okay. The only thing that I remember, and I think you make a great point. I mean, Colorado was selling beer, I think, long before anybody else was in the stadium, and they shut it down, I think, at the end of the third quarter. And the only thing other than, you know, obviously if there's something going on in the stands, whether it's alcohol-related or not, the authorities go in there, someone's having a fight, and they split up. But I do remember this, you know, when we got really good, and I think we had to win a game, it may have been against Kansas State, to go to the Orange Bowl. Out of the student section, you know, there were frozen oranges being thrown on the field. And the support staff and the cheerleaders and everybody who didn't have a helmet on was at risk of really, you know, getting hurt. Mm. And although this happened when I was at coaching in Indiana, we played at Purdue, and there was no alcohol sold there, and they were throwing stuff at us. I actually walked out to the middle of the field to stop the game until the PA announcer told the Purdue fans to stop throwing stuff at us, because I was worried about our trainers and our young students that weren't athletes, but they were supporting us. Anyway, I say all that to say, I remember Colorado, after that game, they videoed the student section the next game. Or the next year, it may have been our last home game, to see that, you know, if it was students throwing things from the stands and it was partially because of the alcohol being sold, they wanted to stop it. That's the only thing I remember.
Yeah, and there's stories about people too tuned up and alcohol fueling that, and maybe alcohol wasn't fueling it. Maybe it was just irate fans and pick a fan base, right? Coach, I want to get your take on the approach by Fox and the prime time decision. Prime time will be at 11 o'clock Central, noon for Fox. That's the decision they're going with when they have first pick of games. Ohio State, Nebraska comes to my mind the end of September. And is that going to be a night game? Is it going to be a Fox or an FS1 production that's going to be an 11 o'clock kick? And, you know, I just think that from a recruiting standpoint, it kind of hampers some teams. If that's the big game you want to bring recruits in for and it's an 11 o'clock or a noon, it's difficult from a Nebraska standpoint. Overall, do you like having some of your marquee matchups that early in the day? And I ask this because you guys were great at LSU at night. You know what I mean? I mean, you had all day to get cranked up for it, and it's a different atmosphere at night versus the day.
Right, and so this was an issue when I was at LSU, and Joe Dean, the athletic director, when CBS would get the game and put it at 1 or 2 o'clock, you know, the fans would go crazy and protest and yell at Joe and blame the administration, and Joe would say, okay, I'll tell CBS to keep the $8 million, and I'll ask them to put us on at 7 o'clock. I mean, Chris, to me, these things are nonsensical. Why is Fox putting on the game at 11, 1, 2, 5, or whatever? They're business. They're trying to make as much money as possible. This is about money. This is a business enterprise. This isn't about the fans. It isn't about the education. This is about making money. That's what college football is. It's a business enterprise. There's no argument against that when you look at where the money and how the money is being spent. So if a network can make more money televising a primetime game at 11 because they have another one in the middle window or whatever, they're going to do it. Fans might not like it, but fans have no control over this unless they want to give back all the money and tear down all the facilities.
Showcase-wise, you have the theory where, okay, so you have the CBS usually Alabama or somebody of substance in the SEC at 2:30 Central Time is what I'm going with. You're going to have your ESPN and Fox 6:30 or 7 kick, right? And then what's open is 11 o'clock. I mean, the other thought about this, yes, money, but the other two is when it comes to ability to promote and kind of go where the other guy isn't, why not own 11 or noon, see if that can work, right? I mean, there's a chance to own that 11 o'clock, and I think that's part of Fox's thinking as well.
As far as I could tell, for my entire life, college football is a regional sport, mm-hmm. okay? It doesn't matter when Alabama's playing if you live in Nebraska. And Alabama doesn't care. Alabama fans, they don't care about the Nebraska fans. I mean, it's regional. It's you're not competing. You know, the Big Ten is not competing with the SEC for fans. I mean, they're just not. It's a regional sport, and whatever time Nebraska plays, my guess is that stadium is going to be sold out. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to like the 11 o'clock. Some people aren't going to like it. It doesn't impact the recruiting. I mean, do you want a recruit that says, I don't want to go to that school, they play at 11 o'clock? Oh, that's a good reason not to go to a school.
I'm talking about getting them there by kickoff for an 11 o'clock kickoff.
Send the private plane. You send the private plane because you can afford a private plane because of these TV contracts. Did you see the revenues?
I saw the number, man. That's pretty nice.
You think? Okay. I mean, we're trying to fix something that's not broken. It's a business enterprise, and they're like Amazon. I mean, this is a rock'em sock'em business that's thriving.
It's doing well. Coach, you got about a minute and a half. Need to ask you, what's the next big thing facility-wise that is out there? You have indoor practice facilities. You have suites. You have, from an infrastructure standpoint, what's out there? What's the next wow thing a school is going to be the first to get?
You know, I think it's more to get something that someone else has. I can't think of anything that we don't have. Now, some schools don't have everything. So
right.
if you don't have the private dining hall, that, you know, that's really what you want. If you don't have the running pits in the weight room, or your weight room isn't the biggest. So I think it's more of, can we be bigger than you? And do we have everything you have? Everyone is missing a little bit of something. So I think the next thing is not a new thing. Can I be state of the art in everything instead of state of the art out of 12 of the most important 15 things?
Gotcha.
Now I could be wrong. I mean, I'm sure someone could think of something that they want to invent or they need and all that. But to me, it's more, can I have the best of anything? Instead of just the best locker room, I want the best locker room and the best weight room. Instead of the best training table and not a good locker room, I want to be the best training table and the best locker room. I think that's the competition, not trying to think of something new, but I could be wrong.
Coach, awesome to get caught up. Thanks for the chat today.
You bet.
Take care.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
I know if there was lightning in the area and he was still putting on fire, he may stick it out. We say hi to the coach, Gary Barnett. Coach, how's the golf season been for you?
You know, Chris, it's got a little bit better towards the end, and now I'm back in Oakland and five straight days of rain, so I don't have to do a lookout at the golf course, so I haven't been able to hit a ball, so... Oh, well, you know, I'm sure it'll get sunny and bright here someday.
What do you do with yourself when you're not able to play golf?
That is one heck of a question. you know, because we just transitioned back, I got a lot of things to do around the house and unload and unpack cars and that kind of stuff. And then I'm involved with a charity foundation that all of the former players at CU are a part of, and we have our once a year big fundraiser coming up, and I'm on that board, so I have a bunch of responsibility, so I actually can get a lot done during the day that I normally would have to rush at in the morning or rush at in the evening. So I'm making the best of it.
That is good to hear. Excited to have Gary Barnett with us, Sail Varsity Radio. So, Coach, I got to ask you, and there's just been – we can't wait for college football to get here. Obviously, 100 days, but who's counting? And there's already buzz and fervor and excitement for Colorado. Whether you like it or not, we're coming out to see you that second week. So – and that's not a Nebraska thing. I'm sure I'll be asking you and pestering you to go golf on Friday. But I want to know where you're at with this game with Nebraska Colorado. Is it just kind of a measuring stick for Nebraska? Is it an opportunity for a new coach at Colorado from an importance level? What do you place on the game?
Well, I place a lot more importance on the game for Nebraska than I do for Colorado because there has been a coaching change. But that's more to do with the two coaches. You know, okay. I think that it's a huge game for you guys. And Scott, just because of the way they lost last year and the way the season started and how it ended up, just a non-conference win away in a pretty hostile environment here in Boulder for the first time in a while. I think it's really important for them to win this game. Now, I'll tell you what, the new guy here, he ain't going back down. I mean, if you think he's just going to say, oh, okay, well, this is our first year, and we'll just see what happens, he's not going to be that way. So he's going to get into it. Once he realizes, he gets into that week or 2 weeks before, probably in August, it'll start here for him. You know, I'm sure he sort of hasn't paid much attention to all the stuff that's been out there so far, but he will. And then it becomes just a huge opportunity for Colorado. But for Nebraska, I think this is just a huge game for them to start off the second season for Scott Frost. Mel Tucker ain't going to back down, and they're going to be a much more physical team than they were last year. They've got all their skill back for the most part. You know, I think they've got a real chance to be good offensively. Defensively is where I don't think anybody knows what this team is going to be like and what they're going to do. So, you know, this could be a shootout, you know, much like last year was, but it'll start festering around here pretty soon.
Well, and there's – you can't go a week without something coming up about it, be it ticket sales or folks that we know around here that are becoming Buff season ticket holders for the year and finding their way out to Colorado. I want to get your thoughts on the Big Ten. And I was watching the Big Ten Network this week, and they had your documentary on with your 95 Wildcats taking the purple to Pasadena. I really enjoyed it. I saw it before, but I hadn't seen it in a while. And it touched on when you got to Northwestern and then how you grew the program and Coach Fitzgerald and that special team you had. And I'm wondering who's ready to make a move in the Big Ten this year. Do you sense the Big Ten kind of still be in the Big Ten, or is there an opportunity for some teams to maybe climb their way up?
Well, I still think there's three teams that everybody's going to have to find a way to beat, and the two Michigan teams, Penn State and Ohio State, and I think Minnesota is going to be closer than they have been. I think Nebraska is going to be closer. I think it's obvious Purdue is going to be a little bit closer. You know, and after that, Wisconsin is a team that really has the capacity of being in there, but I really sort of see it's still those four teams and everybody else trying to work into that group. And so you were talking about that team and that documentary. We had a get-together in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. We had a golf outing and had all those guys, had a lot of guys back. And I had a bunch of guys from Colorado come out because we're doing sort of a home-and-home game between my players at Northwestern and at Colorado. And it was so cool. I got the chance to introduce each group to everybody. And it was just, you know, with a group of guys that were there when I first got there and had to live through the toughening up and the changes that we made, the guys that we recruited, all the people that helped us get along there, administrators and people like that, friends that kept us from getting discouraged and going home, and then they got to meet Colorado players much the same way. So it was really a fun event.
Coach, there's a lot to take away from the documentary, but watching you on camera as you're coming home after Michigan beats Ohio State, and what, fans threw roses on your doorstep?
Yeah, on the yard and the doorstep, yeah. And the whole yard was covered with roses. So, and I had no idea, Chris. I mean, I had no idea.
No, I know, I know. I just looking at your
game meant to so many people. So.
Well, no, but that's. I mean, just seeing your reaction like that was incredible. Where,
yeah,
you're just rolling home. Hey, we're going to the Rose Bowl after resurrecting this program, and I mean, it had really never enjoyed success since the Johnny Rogers era, right? So, I mean, what you did was incredible, and then you come home, and then there's that. That's really special. That's pretty cool. Gary Barnett's with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach PJ Fleck in the news, footballscoop.com, kind of retweeting today. Fleck's interview with the Star Tribune in Minneapolis. When it comes to recruiting and his stance on recruiting, if you commit, you commit, you can't visit elsewhere. That's where he's at. I know that's Iowa's stance. I haven't really talked or asked Coach Frost about it. Nebraska's done a really good job of recruiting, so it's not been something that's come up where other guys are looking around. What was your stance with recruiting? Could guys, if they air quote, verbally committed to you, and still had a visit or two left, were you okay with them still visiting, or did you ask them to shut it down?
No, we pretty much asked them to shut it down. You know, we looked at it as an engagement, and we just said, look, it's okay if you want to break the engagement, but that means we get to break it too. And that's just the way it is. Now, there's some people on my staff that might say, well, it depends on how good a player he is. But I don't think that was true. You had to do and say anything you could to avoid them taking another visit. And it wasn't so much that you were afraid of whoever they were going to go visit. But some kids, just wherever the last place they visit, that's where they end up being influenced and deciding to go. So you're trying to avoid that scenario. And a lot of it comes down to what their parents, you know, what the role with the parents is, you know, how strong the parents are in the home. Because when they make that commitment, one of the things you do is you get on the phone with mom and dad, you say, or mom and dad, or one of the two, and just say, you know what this means? Are you going to support us in this? And, you know, if there's any glimpse that maybe they're not, they're going to, you know, you don't take it as seriously as you want to take it. So, but you let them know that it goes both ways.
Sure. Coach, last thought here, and appreciate your time. It's great to get caught up. How does your old buddy Les Miles do? What's going through his mind right now, if you can project, at Kansas as he's back in coaching? And Mack Brown, a guy you know well, also back in action at North Carolina. What do you think about both of these guys back in the game and back at it after some time away?
It's a rebirth. I mean, they are re-energized. You know, Kansas is coming up with a lot of money for Les. I mean, a lot of money for additional assistants, interns, analysts, that kind of thing. And everybody is pretty excited. He had a heck of a running back in that program that was just a freshman.
Yeah.
His style of ball, that really matches it. But Les is really excited. And he's going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, and his wife invited me to go, and I'm trying to figure out if I could work it to go see him. But, and then Max the same way. You know, you just miss it when you get out, and you just wish you had another chance. Well, guess what? They got what they wished for, and I think it'll re-energize both of them a lot.
Carolina's always been a place where it's just very fertile recruiting-wise. He's won there before, obviously. I mean, he had a top-five program there. You can win at Kansas, too. And I think Les will get KU rolling again. I think they'll be – KU's not that far removed from being pretty high level. We got about 30 seconds. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, do you think they can get it turned around?
Yeah, I think David Beatty did a great job. He had to rebuild that whole thing. And, you know, I was sad to see him go because he won 3 or 4 big games this year and played everybody tough. And I thought he had deserved a chance to go on. But I understand, mm-hmm. new AD, new coach. So Les has got a better team than anybody knows. I agree with you.
Okay. Hey, Coach, enjoy your summer. We'll run you down again soon and make it stop raining in Boulder so you can swing the clubs, okay?
I'm going to build an arc. So. Talk to you later, Chris.
See you. Take care. I want to ask him if he's got a couple buffalo on the arc. That's pretty good. Good stuff from Coach Gary Barnett. Love talking college football with him. We'll keep rolling here on it with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now...
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
We're going to head down to Oklahoma and get caught up with the Pride of Fairbury. NBC Sports' is Bill Dolman. He is locked in for Big 12 baseball this weekend. Billy D, I got to say thanks because you brought this idea to a reality. You know, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago at the Average Joe Sports Show, you took the show on the road, my friend, to a listener's house out back on a gorgeous May afternoon. That's what we're doing today. How you been?
You know, I forgot about that, but that is a great idea. That was the ultimate in Average Joe Sports Show.
It was. It was awesome. Gorgeous weather, sitting out back. Someone else is cooking. Searle's brought the pizza.
Absolutely.
I mean, how's your week been? I know you're in Oklahoma and getting ready for Big 12 baseball. Some weather's been down there, and you got a lot of talent down your neck of the woods with college baseball going on.
Well, fortunately, we've not had the weather come through while I've been here. They had some bad stuff before. They had some bad stuff north. They haven't had anything come through while I've been down here, but that's always a threat because it's Oklahoma. But this is that's about my, I don't know, sixth, seventh year of doing the Big 12 tournament, something like that. And, you know, it's always fun to be here. And then this is it's a great league. It's the number two RPI baseball conference in the country, the second to the SEC. I've had an opportunity to see some people who will be called very early when the draft rolls around here in a couple of weeks. Last night, a pitcher from West Virginia named Alec Manoah may get drafted in June and may be in the big leagues by September, and he's just that good. So there's a great quality of baseball being played down here, and they're very territorial about how good they are. Every now and then, the name Nebraska gets mentioned. We talked about the Huskers a little bit on the air last night. But it is somewhat surreal to be down here to do this every year and not have the Huskers be a part of the Big 12.
It's different, man. I'll tell you that. Nebraska making noise in Omaha today. Not only pounding Iowa, but run ruling Iowa. Mercy ruling Iowa.
Tap out.
And I know that doesn't make you sad when you have your headset off, Bill.
Well, you know, and keep in mind, it was the Huskers showed a lot of heart. It was a come from behind win, too.
Sure. Yeah. We're down 1-0.
Yeah. So, it just shows the heart of a Husker right there, you know?
A lot of grit.
Hey, Darren Erstad's still the head coach. Is that not correct?
It is.
Okay. I'm just checking, you know, because every now and then those guys with fake names on the internet start to stir up some trouble and. Causes some problems and makes us talk about things like that. But look, I think you've seen Nebraska baseball under Darren Erstad in a microcosm over the last 2-3 weeks, really since the month of May. And they've got a winning record. I know they're just like 8-4, 9-5, or something like that in the month of May. they've turned it on in the last 2 weeks. You win a series against Michigan. You win against the series against Arizona State. You knock off Minnesota. You're one of, you know, Nebraska could very easily have been the number three seed, and I know they tied for third, and they end up being number five. And that doesn't look good on paper. I'm down here for the Big 12 tournament. Oklahoma had a decent season, and for the most of the season was in the NCAA regional conversation. But they come to town, and they end up as the number seven seed behind Kansas and behind TCU. And I know when the NCAA committee looks at those seeds, they may not see every game that every team plays, but on paper in black and white, yeah, it doesn't look great that Nebraska's the number five seed. And sure, it looked awful for Oklahoma, but they were the number seven seed, even though people have been talking about them. They go 2-2, and they're gone. Nebraska goes, okay, we're the number five seed. We could have been three. Let's just go out and win the thing. And I'm not sure, you know, Nebraska, what, they picked up their 30th win of the season, I think, today.
Yep.
Taking away Iowa statehood. So I would imagine, you know, a 30th win is probably, I still think it's an NCAA regional team, but I don't like the fact that on paper they were the five seed. That's on paper, that's not on the field. So what they're doing is proving how good they are on the field. Two wins in a row, inclement weather. They pounded out 15 hits today. I think they're good enough to be in, but I think they need to solidify things. It would probably be a really good thing for Nebraska to at least get to the final. I don't think they need to win the whole thing to get in, but I think they need one more win to get to the final, and I think that solidifies their spot.
I think they're in a good spot to get that final and to get to the final. I don't think they lose twice tomorrow against Iowa or Minnesota, the teams they've already beat. Bill Dolman's with us, NBC Sports, Pride of Fairbury. He's down in Oklahoma City ready for Big 12 baseball at Bricktown. He gakes the airwaves tonight at 7. So, Bill, let's get to some Nebraska football. Dedrick Mills got qualified. He's a JUCO running back. He's just a monster talent. Did a great rookie year, freshman season, freshman of the year in the ACC. Played in that Paul Johnson wishbone and was the up back, where he is all about being a quick hitter. So he got into school. That is good. Nebraska is being picked and being kind of saluted as a lot of experts. And we talk about Street and Smith and Athlon, two magazines I read as a kid that have Nebraska winning the West. Who's your biggest question mark for Nebraska in the West? And I know it's talking season. We're 199 days away from college football, but I'm not counting. who's the team that you think Nebraska's got to take down in the West? The answer is all of them, yes. But who's the one team that is kind of the linchpin, so to speak?
Well, I'm tired of us being competitive with Northwestern. I don't think we should be competitive with Iowa anymore. You know, those are the ones where we need to start separating ourselves from, you know, it's like I said back in the day of the when Nebraska was still in the Big 12, you know, they're falling into this mode of being competitive with Texas Tech and Missouri and, you know, trying to keep Kansas State at bay when you need to be up there. And annually it's Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska. And I think Nebraska needs to separate itself from those middle of the pack teams, which they've not done. And, you know, obviously losing to Northwestern in the way we did a year ago, I mean, that's going to stick in the craw. The way you lose to Iowa last year, that's going to stick with you a little bit. But I think Nebraska in year two of the Scott Frost era is ready to move away from those teams already. I think this is going to be a team that's going to make a huge leap from year one to year two. I think you're going to see Ohio State with Ryan Day probably start to move back to the pack. We don't know what we're going to get with Michigan for the most part. And I know those are teams in the other division, but I'm saying Nebraska needs to not be talking about, you know, who are we going to beat in the West. It's just going to be Nebraska has to be in that conversation with the best teams in the Big Ten as the front runners. And I don't think we're necessarily there yet, but it's not going to be that long before it's going to be, well, the Big Ten, of course, Nebraska, Michigan, and Ohio State. That's the way it needs to be. And Penn State, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of expectations on this team coming into the 2019 season, none of which bigger than on second-year quarterback Adrian Martinez. What do you see from expectation level him jumping, making that jump to that sophomore season, or do you think he might be one of those guys falls into that sophomore slump that everyone kind of worries about? But like expectation wise, it's never been higher for a guy like that. What do you want to see out of him going into this season?
You know, I want to see him play with a comfortably, and that's really kind of an odd thing to say, but because I'm sure he's going to have some pressure on him given all the stuff that's being heaped upon him. I mean, I'm not a big proponent of the Heisman Trophy at all anymore. I think it is so way overplayed, and to be throwing that talk around at this time of year, the thing about Adrian Martinez, and I'm not around him at all, but from afar, he does seem to have the whole thing in a pretty good perspective. He's got a coach that's got things in pretty good perspective, and Scott Frost is going to put him in a situation to where his talents are going to be utilized and maximized to the best of his ability. But I also think with a guy like Mills, I think if the offensive line gets improved, you got to find somebody to replace Stanley Morgan. I think Scott understands it's not all on Adrian. And I think that he needs to impart that to Adrian, that it's not all on you. This is not necessarily your team. Yes, you are the quarterback, but I've got things handled for you. I'm going to put you in situations where you're going to succeed. I think Nebraska's in a better place than Central Florida it was in with the quarterback whose name all of a sudden escapes me. And I'm sorry, the name escapes. But I think that Nebraska has more weapons to utilize and to maximize that will make it a much more comfortable season for Adrian Martinez, that he can realize, you know what, I don't have to do it every single play. And we saw last year that there were times when he would make a bad pitch, make a bad throw, and you wonder how he would react as a freshman. And for the most part, I think he did. But I don't think he has to press this year. So I want him to be comfortable. I want him to be comfortable in that role. I want him to be comfortable in the fact that there's a quality backup behind him. I think Noah Vedral coming back and getting the eligibility, you know, he had the last year. I think that's incredibly important. I think the kid McCaffrey coming in from Denver and my neighborhood, I think it's important that Nebraska has somebody that is serviceable as a backup quarterback. And all of that's going to give some comfort to Adrian Martinez that he doesn't have to be the guy.
Bill Dolman's with us, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, Hale Varsity Radio, getting ready for Big 12 baseball tonight as the call. So, Bill, I want to go back to the last championship, and this kind of spurred me. Well, I was waiting for the Nebraska game today to get rolling at 11:30 on BTN. They did a documentary on the 97 Nebraska National Championship team, and always get into those. And I always enjoy seeing your picture in the locker room next to Coach Osborne after Nebraska handed it to Tennessee. I was in my third sophomore year at Nebraska, so we went down as a family, and it was an amazing time with the face paint on, watching Nebraska do their thing against Tennessee. You were there for that season. You know how 96 went. You were there for 97. How did Coach Osborne groom Coach Frost to accept that challenge and moment with the expectations?
Well, first of all, Tom never changed. You know, Tom and Tom didn't come out and say, like, okay, well, this is how it's got to be, and Scott's our guy, and we will live and die with Scott Frost. Tom never said that about anybody. You know, he may have had praise like, well, he's one of the best we've ever had, and I'm just mean that in a general comment, and that would be effusive praise from Tom Osborne. But Tom was so steady, high and low, and I think everybody, when they came into the program, eventually understood. They may not know it right away, but they understood that anything that you were going to get was going to be earned, and nothing was going to be given to you, no matter how many stars you had been given prior to the time you arrived in Nebraska. I don't think Tom put a lot of stock in 4-star, 3-star, 5-star type stuff. Obviously, you want to get the best players you possibly can, but anybody who came to Nebraska was going to get an even shot. And once that was ingrained and understood, that everything that you did there had to be earned and everything that you were given had to be earned, I think Scott and everybody else, be it Grant Wistrom or Christian Peter or Tony Veland or Mike Mentor, whoever it was, understood that I'm a part of something really big here. So my coach is consistent. He's consistent in the way he conducts his business. He's consistent in the way he coaches this team. He's consistent in the way that he gives everybody a shot every day. And so for Scott, he knew that when he went to practice on Monday, watched film on Sunday, that everything was going to be the same, and he had to put forth the same effort. or the job was going to be taken away from him. And over time, you come to understand, like, I'm just one of the guys, and I just need to be better than the next guy if I'm going to get a play. And I think that that mentality and that atmosphere consistency is what has led Scott Frost to where he is today, and I'm sure that's what he imparts on the players. Whoever comes to play for Scott Frost, we want you here, we believe in you, we love you, and we think you're going to be great for us, but you got to earn what we're going to give you. And I think that was really important. So there was never any extra pressure put on Scott, like, you're the guy, you got to be the guy, you got to do it for us. That was never the case with anybody.
Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's a Patio Friday. Jeremiah Searles, Chris Schmidt, a tribute to the Average Joe Sports Show many moons ago on a Friday out back on a patio in South Lincoln. Billy D, have an amazing weekend. Have a great call tonight. Thanks for jumping on with us today, bud.
It's always great to visit with you, and I understand Jeremiah's with Buffalo. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
They have buffalo wings there.
Yes, they do. Incredible buffalo wings.
Just wanted to throw that tip out there. Just in case you haven't heard.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Bill, be good, buddy. Thanks so much.
Go Big Red.
Gerber. That is the Pride of Fairbury. Bill Dolman on Hail Varsity Radio. He always ends it with, Go Big Red.
Go Big Red.
Love it.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out. Excellent strategy, sir.
You say hi to a tremendous writer with the Journal Star. Parker Gabriel is with us. Parker, thanks for a few minutes, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. You got the Senator in the house today?
We do, man. We've got the remote equipment out here. It's all plugged in. Sunshine, but we're out of the sun. Searles is hanging out. Yeah, man, we're just getting ready for a big weekend. I want to start with baseball before we get into your sit-down with Farniok. What were your expectations, Parker, for Nebraska baseball heading into this weekend in Omaha?
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I didn't have huge expectations, but it's not because I was down on the group necessarily. I just didn't quite know what to expect. I mean, it's a group that over the last couple weeks has played well and found a way to gut out some important wins. You know, Arizona State, Michigan, obviously the last series of the regular season. And also, you know, they got great pitching from the seniors in the rotation, but it wasn't, for the most part, you know, you weren't talking about really prolific offense. And so you just figured that they were going to play competitive games and close games in Omaha. And then they, you know, even without a lot of offensive thump on Wednesday, they get 8 runs on the board and coast there. And then really sort of, you know, bust out obviously today against Iowa. So obviously they're off to a great start. It's a group that, you know how it goes with baseball, especially in a postseason setting. You know, if you feel good, and you've got pitching, you've got a chance, and they're showing that obviously through two games at the Big Ten tournament.
That they are, and Parker Gabriel's with us, Lincoln Journal Star, Hail Varsity Radio. The consistency part's always what makes you like hesitate on baseball in general, but necessarily this Nebraska baseball team, and what a tale of a 2.5 innings in the second, right, where Iowa gets a run but leaves the bases full. Nebraska is able to not just tie it but get 4 runs. And then Fisher found his control. And with Nebraska's depth and more so rest, they have not had to tax the bullpen. That advantage is big time. Of the teams left, you got Minnesota and Iowa. They'll duke it out tonight to see who gets to take on Nebraska again. But from a standpoint of matchups, do you feel good for Nebraska moving forward based on who's left in this tournament?
Yeah, sure. And I think especially, I mean, you know, you never, unless you're the number one seed, you never mind when the number one seed makes an early exit like Indiana did. I mean, it's such a wide open tournament, but I just think that the winner's bracket and having 2 wins under your belt makes such a huge difference. And especially, you know, think about tomorrow. You know, let's say they have to play they lose tomorrow and they have to play a second game with either one of those teams. Well, that still puts them in great shape because, you know, they've played one fewer game than either Iowa or Minnesota will have at that point. And so I just think, like you said, I mean, it can be, even in a game that's lopsided, it can be such a fine line. You know, if Nate Fisher doesn't make some really big pitches to get out of that second inning and get back in a groove, you know, you're talking about a potentially a completely different game if he goes three or four innings rather than what he pitched seven. And so that's, I mean, it's huge. It's huge when you have to make big pitches in Nebraska's two sort of frontline seniors have done that so far, and now we'll see if some of the other guys can keep it rolling here as they hit the weekend.
Parker, we'll get to football, and thanks for spending a few minutes on Husker baseball. Okay, Dedrick Mills is in. That news came down officially Wednesday. Tuesday, you felt good about it. He was admitted Wednesday, and we all know that Nebraska needs to and wants to run the football as well or better than they did last year. What are your thoughts on Mills as far as a number? What's a number he needs to hit this year? And overall, if it's by committee, what's a rushing number that will bode well for Nebraska in 2019?
Yeah, honestly, I think the most important number for Dedrick Mills, or the way that you'll know that Dedrick Mills has had the influence that Nebraska obviously hopes he does, is 12, right? I mean, if he plays, if he's available and he plays the whole year and he stays healthy, which, I mean, you know, he broke his collarbone when he first got to junior college. That's not, you know, that happens sometimes. But if he's available and he's at Nebraska's disposal all of this fall, I think that you're going to see the production, you know, come along with it. It might be by committee. You might see, I mean, I think Bryce Washington in particular, but assuming he's available. But Dedrick Mills also, you know, both those guys have the ability to catch a ball in the backfield a little bit. They have a bunch of other guys that can do that with Wandale Robinson, Miles Jones, those types. And so, I don't know. I won't put a yardage on him just yet that he needs to get, but I think it's a huge addition. You know, if you want to talk about the running game in general, I mean, they averaged 5 yards a carry and had 25 rushing touchdowns last year. So, I think that the offensive line certainly would tell you that should be the floor, you know? And those are pretty good marks. 5 yards a carry was number 16 in the country last year, and so you're talking about a pretty potent rushing attack if they're that good or better this fall.
Right, like you said, last year the rushing game I thought was actually pretty good last year, but they lose a lot of pieces up front for that offensive line last year that they're going to need to replace. And like you said, there's a lot of talent in that backfield, but I'll be the first one to tell you that as long as those five guys up front don't do what they need to do, it doesn't matter what those guys do back there. So what have you seen with these guys and the spring practice coming out? Like, what's your thoughts on this new revamped Husker offensive line that's going to take them into this 2019 season so that those guys can hit those numbers that we're talking about?
Well, I got to say, I think the good listener should be much more interested in your thoughts about the offensive line. But I think, you know, they have the three returning starters. They've got the three returning starters and the tackles and Bo Wilson at right guard pretty firmly entrenched. I think that we've gotten to the point in terms of program building that it's okay to put expectations on these guys, right? I mean, there's certainly a lot of expectations on Adrian Martinez and J.D. Spielman, and guys like Matt Forniok and Brendan Hymas have played a lot of football now. And if you have a pair of tackles that are each going into what is essentially their third year of starting this year, I think you can say that you'd like to see them establish themselves as one of the better, or, you know, one of the best tackle pairs in the conference. And you've got Bo Wilson at right guard, and then Trent Hixon, to me, based on what the coaches have said, it's going to be hard. It's not impossible. It's going to be hard to unseat him, I think, from that left guard spot. Center's the big question mark. It has been huge all along. Tanner Farmer really settled that position down when he took over there last year. And, You know, you don't need necessarily All-American performance from there. That'd be great, obviously. But whoever wins that job, whether it's Cameron Jurgens or Will Farniak or someone else, it's a crucial spot communication-wise and obviously literally snapping the ball. And I think that that group, they certainly have high expectations for themselves. And even though they're losing a couple of seniors who played a lot of football, I can see why they think they can be better in 2019 than they were in 2018.
Parker Gabriel's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Lincoln Journal star, at Husker Extra PGs, where you follow him on Twitter. You had a great story earlier this week with Matt Farniak, and I like how he kind of laid it out to you about how the wheels would come off, and then things kind of stabilized, and they were proud of how they fought. They were close in some big-time games, but, you know, extra step versus not quite there, and that isn't going to be acceptable this year. What did you take away from Farniak with his confidence level and how things have gone as they head into the summer?
I think one of the things that struck me was, you know, you're talking about, you know, mid-May, and so you're a long ways removed from the end of football season, and frankly, given the way Nebraska finished the season, I think a lot of people, you know, it's been such a positive thought process largely this offseason, and there's a lot of promise and all of that. But it was interesting that he went right back to the first half of last year and what they learned. It's clear that they haven't forgotten, you know, sort of what happened and the, of course, the progress that they made, but also why the season started the way it did. And, you know, I think you look at the game against Northwestern, that's a game that a lot of Nebraska fans and certainly the players and coaches thought they should have won, could have won, had won. And they get one first down there on either one of two possessions in the fourth quarter, and you never put Tanner Farmer in the position to make a bad snap in overtime. You never put Carlos Davis in a position to have that roughing the passer penalty that started that 99-yard drive. So I think that's a big – even though they're looking to make major progress, I think a lot of that progress comes in small, detailed areas. And Matt Farniak certainly is one of the leaders of that group here going forward.
Parker, last thought with Nebraska this weekend in recruiting. What's kind of on the radar for them? Sounds like they have quite a few officials still in their back pocket.
Yeah, they got some officials to use before August rolls around for sure. I think you're going to see the biggest recruiting weekend of the summer will probably be the last one before the dead period hits in late June. So that's like June 21st. I think they're setting up a big weekend that weekend. They got a couple of interesting guys. They got a group of guys from Iowa Western that's coming down the road just for unofficial visits this weekend. An offensive lineman and a defensive lineman that both have offers. And obviously, I think that it seems like it should be a natural connection, right, between Scott Strohmeyer's program just across the river and Nebraska. And it hasn't been in the past. But, you know, they would love to add either one of those guys, Perrion Winfrey, defensive lineman, or I'm blanking on his name. They got a big offensive lineman over there too. And so that's sort of the immediate. And then before you know it, here in a couple weeks, it'll be camp season beginning. You'll have a lot of high school kids through Lincoln over the course of the month of June. And I think, you know, you'll start to see the class come together a little bit more over the next 6 weeks or so.
Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal star with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Parker, have a great holiday weekend. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today, man. Great to catch up.
Yeah, anytime, Schmitty. Have a good weekend, guys.
Right now, we are going to see how Greg Smith is doing. We know he's going to kill it when it comes to recruiting and recruiting recon with HailVarsity.com, but we have to do a Laker update every week. And Gregers, thanks for jumping on with us. What did you think of the Magic show this week?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure if his plan here is to help the Lakers sign a big-time free agent. I'm not sure he advanced the cause. I still don't have – how many days has it been since that happened? I still don't have words for that.
Like Monday or Tuesday that show happened.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Maybe Kyrie will bail us out here.
That'd be nice.
I don't know about Kyrie. I'd go after – I'm a Klay Thompson guy.
I like Clay too, but dude, I think the LeBron-Kyrie dynamic would be cool to see again, though.
But Kyrie's the same guy who thought he didn't need LeBron.
But now he came out and he apologized. He's back. I don't know. I would like to see that.
Greg, there won't be any code red or anything for that, will there?
No. But I think that it's still like if he doesn't want to go back with LeBron, why would he want to go with KD in New York? Like, I think you go back with the safe choice, the guy you won a championship with already.
Right.
Greg, give us some recruiting recon, bud. What's the weekend look like? Who's coming to town? And what are some priorities here the end of May and first part of June for Nebraska and Coach Frost?
Yeah, so Nebraska actually has kind of a busy weekend here coming up. I'll start with a future class, the class of 2021. The number one player out of Oklahoma for the class of 21, Ethan Downs, will be in town. He plays tight end and defensive end in high school, and Nebraska's recruiting him as kind of that hybrid outside linebacker / defensive end. It's actually the second time he's been to campus. He was here last summer for Friday Night Lights camp, and he's pretty high on the staff. He's kind of getting recruited by everyone on the staff right now, so building the relationship all over the place within the staff, which is good. It's good to get him back on campus. Then Nebraska will also have a group from Iowa Western Community College just across the river coming in, kind of headlined by Perrion Winfrey, the defensive tackle who Nebraska has been in on for a while. I think they offered him right after Tony Tuioti took over the defensive line coach position, and since then he's done nothing but continue to accumulate offers. I think recently he's got Florida State and Alabama, among others, that have come in on him. So Nebraska really trying to rekindle that Iowa Western connection going forward as well.
You know, Iowa Western's such a big part of what's going on in JUCO football, and they've been such a talented squad under Coach Strohmeyer, and it's so close. And you have Nebraska with a couple of guys that are right there with Winfrey and Gamble, of course.
Yep.
Let's talk offensive tackles. And Greg, where's Nebraska at? What are they doing offensive tackle-wise? I know they've got kids in the boat now for the near future, but depth-wise, I mean, they're looking at some JUCO OTs, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a couple of junior college offensive tackles that got offers recently. You mentioned Jacob Gamble, who'll be here this weekend from IWCC. And then also Killian Zierer, who's a really interesting kid, a German kid that's only been watching football for 4 years. 4 years ago was the first time he watched his first football game and playing the sport for 3 years. But he's out at College of the Canyons, JUCO out in California. And he continues to be one of the hottest names in junior college recruiting, regardless of position. But I think at this point, the offensive tackles for JUCO, I think, are guys that they're kind of keeping tabs on and making sure that they have started to build up that relationship just in case things don't work out with their high school prospects they have for the 2020 class. Still expecting to take a couple tackles in this class. Obviously, they have Turner Corcoran already in the boat, but still after a couple of other really nice targets. And we'll also have to see, I think, how the guys that get to campus here this summer over the next month really look once they get here to see just how far away they are from playing as well, and if you need to get a junior college tackle to come in and play right away.
How big was Mills? I mean, I think it's enormous, but your level of stress for it was what?
I was pretty stressed out about that, and I imagine that the coaching staff was as well, Brian Held especially, because having Dedrick Mills in the fold and having him in the clear and now on campus, he's already here participating in summer workouts, means a great deal to the outlook of this running game for this upcoming season. Like, he's a guy that they're going to count on heavily to be able to play regardless of what happens with Maurice Washington. Dedrick Mills was going to have to play quite a bit, and now that he is here and going to be ready to go, the trickle-down effect of that is pretty big too, because now you can bring along Ramir Johnson a little bit slower. You don't have to force him into action, but he can still play. And then I still expect Ronald Tompkins to come in and be able to get a red shirt and get that knee completely healthy. I can't imagine that, you know, he's anywhere near being able to ready to play in the Big Ten at this point, coming off of that knee injury at the beginning of last season. So we'll see about that. But it's a huge deal to have Mills in the fold and ready to roll.
Tell me about Cody Simon, kid out of Jersey, Notre Dame, Penn State, Nebraska, 4-star defensive prospect. What's the lowdown on him?
Yeah, so it looks like Cody Simon, who was, he was out here for a junior day earlier, I think the one in February, if I'm not mistaken. He was here for that, and he'll be back out for an official visit the weekend of June 7th. And I think it's his first, I think it'll be his first official visit. So Nebraska will try to get out in front of Penn State and Notre Dame. And I think he has a brother that plays at Notre Dame right now, but I'm not sure at this point that the feeling is that he's a lock by any stretch to Notre Dame. Is there doing pretty well in recruiting, and also he's trying to look around a little bit. I think Nebraska has a good shot here, especially if they're getting the first official visit and have the opportunity to set the bar for him. But he's a really talented kid out of a powerhouse program out in New Jersey.
How's Nebraska going to use their officials this summer? They've got 11. They had like none a year ago. I know that Nebraska's been fantastic with getting kids here for unofficials, but what's the process here for the rest of 2020 and beyond?
Yeah, Nebraska's going to have to make some decisions, I think, on how they kind of proceed with these official visits. Like you mentioned, they have 11 official visits to use for 2020 prospects this summer. But also keep in mind that some of those kids, it's not just the high school kids, but it's also the junior college kids that maybe you want to bring in early, because it's difficult to get junior college kids into Lincoln for during the season or anywhere during the season because their schedules are so tight. Most JUCOs play their games on Saturday. You also, just in case, you know, you have another graduate transfer that comes available, you want to have be able to use an official visit there as well. And you have a bunch of high school prospects and high priority guys that have stated that they would like to take summer official visits so that they can get their decision out of the way before their senior season. So there is going to be a juggling act. And I'm glad I'm not the one that has to figure that out. But my understanding is they have a pretty good handle on what's happening there. And I think you'll see a combination of using some of those officials during the season. If they have some left over, they can roll over five as well. And then you'll see a big group come out for that first game of the season as well.
Greg Smith, recruiting analyst with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Smith HV is where you follow him. And Greg, I know we're getting close to yearbook time with Hail Varsity. I broke Vogel's concentration yesterday from the bunker. And you know, he's getting the team previews ready. I know you're going to have some awesome stuff, and Babbers will be rocking, and Jacob and Derek and Aaron Sorensen, so I'm excited about it. Give me a little preview, my man, of what you're excited about with the yearbook. I know you've been working hard with it.
Yeah, there are some great stories. I feel like I say this every year, but there are some great stories coming in the yearbook this year that we took a lot of time and care to present. I have a story about shocker, Nebraska recruiting,
and
about
well,
kind of how, yeah, it's kind of how, you know, how it comes together that a kid even gets on the board, how you kind of go through that process of recruiting a kid, but then also if you were a new coach, say Tony Tuioti, told through his eyes what it's like to be able to get a kid that you had been recruiting onto the board, and kind of take you inside of kind of those staff meetings and how what that process is like. So I'm really excited for you guys to be able to check that out.
That is so good. I can't wait. It's interesting, right? Because kids leave, coaches leave, and what's that high wire act of a kid that you've really connected with and you've been talking to, let's just say, for example, about Cal,
right?
Now trying to get him to Nebraska. And if he's good enough to play for Wilcox, you sure as hell want to take him at Nebraska. Greg, a last thought here, and we got to talk food. What is on the Greg Smith menu this weekend, assuming the rain doesn't revisit? It's gorgeous right now. I think you're probably staring out at your grill right now. What's for dinner?
I am actually staring at the grill. You know me well and how I do these interviews. But we will have chicken legs. Chicken legs will be kind of going on the grill. And then my backup plan is to just go out there quickly with some hot dogs this weekend and an umbrella should it come to that.
Okay. You got to get over here, Searles, when you're back from camp.
Yes.
We got to do spare ribs, beef ribs.
Yes. I still have a full pork shoulder from a pig that I shot like 2 years ago.
You shot that with Tommy and
Foltzy? Yeah, Tommy
and
Foltzy and them. So I guess longer, probably about 4 years ago. So I got a full pig shoulder I got to throw on this Traeger that I'm staring at right here.
I'll do it. Greg, you want to come over for it?
Yeah, somebody send the memo out to me. I'll be there.
Good enough. Greg, have a great weekend. Thanks for your time, bud.
Hey, thanks as always. Enjoy the weekend, guys.
There he is, Greg Smith, recruiting analyst, Hail Varsity.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranek.
Dean, you had a great event that I know you were covering, Sooners helping Sooners earlier in the week, and saw that you had a chance to spend some time with Coach Switzer. And one of my favorite people, Mike Leach, the Pirate, had a sport coat on for the event. And I wanted to ask you about that 1999 staff where you had Leach and Mangino, and it was year two for Stoops, and obviously you went on to win a national championship in 2000, but the staff that was there in 99 was something else, a bunch of characters. Was that the peak of entertainment? Great minds, fabulous coaches, but lots of different personalities.
Well, I think that's part of it, and I think you could probably look at maybe some of Bob Devaney's staffs and say the same thing. I don't know about Tom. I mean, I know some of those guys, McBride, who I follow, you and Varsity, with having him on a lot. I know that some of those staffs had to be that way, although under Dr. Tom, it probably wasn't seen as much as it was down here with Coach Switzer and obviously with Bob Stoops' bunch in 99. Yeah, there were characters, but those guys that you're talking about, especially when you go throw in Mike Stoops, at that time, really, really good, fresh off of success at Kansas State, alongside the co-defensive coordinator, Brent Venables. I like to look at those young staffs like that as the most potent in college football, and that's how they're able to turn programs around, is you have guys that are 24/7 guys, meaning they're devoted to one another and making their product championship level by being together and working the job 24/7, whether it's over beers or over blackboards or over recruiting sessions. And they were at their peak. But a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And the funny thing is, I don't know how well you guys know Bob Stoops, but Stoops is a much more fun-loving guy than he lets on.
I got to meet Coach Stoops in media days in 2000. It was a good time. We had a Bud Light. Always get a kick out of hearing Mike Leach stories and cleaning ladies scaring him every morning.
Hey, well, yeah, that is crazy. That's one of the things he talked about. And I know some other coaches under his tree have some similar habits. I mentioned Dana Holgorsen up at Oklahoma State. For a few years there under Mike Gundy, never bothered to live in housing. He lived in a hotel, a motel. I don't think they have a hotel. Lived in a motel in Stillwater forever. But I tell you, and Mike Leach, I got to tell you a quick Leach story. But he first came to, I was doing college football for ABC. So I set up an appointment to go by his office and meet with him. Went in, and I could see he was real uncomfortable. And after about 2 or 3 minutes, he said, "Hey, man, I'd rather talk about this outside the office here." And he looked out the window at O'Connell's Pub, was right around the corner. So we went to the tavern, and he immediately guzzled about 8 beers in 8 minutes. And within 15 minutes, he had the waitresses clear out one half of this bar and put chairs, set them up as defensive players and as wide receivers, and was using those to show me how the offense worked. I was shaking my head about what was coming to Oklahoma, but I knew that it was either going to be a genius hire by Stoops, or it was the dumbest thing that he or anyone else had ever done.
Dean Blevins with us, Hail Varsity Radio, News 9 Oklahoma, and of course the sports animal, at Dean Blevins on Twitter.